the earth beneath him trembled. Lost and father through the door of time. Uncle Jack went searching and found the kids at last. Looking for a way to escape. Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I think we ought to change the name of the show.
What?
It could be the Crazy Razzle
Dazzle
Hour.
We did just change the closing music already.
I can see it now. Razzle Dazzle, get yourself down. Razzle Dazzle, turn yourself around. Razzle Dazzle. Of course, we don't have an emu, but, you know, we can work on that.
Well, as we say every week, kids, the comics we like the least, we still like better than the comics Ooh. You like the most. Good night.
Good night, everybody. Ah, you didn't have much of a childhood, did you?
Yes, I did. I didn't watch that show because I watched other
things. We're talking, of course, about
like anything else.
Classic Hudson Brothers Razzle Dazzle show. And I know it's classic because my daughters and I sat down and watched a half of it and they were laughing silly. Mostly at the, what was that guy, Rod and his...
How ugly and cheap it looked.
Well, you get past that. And the fact that 90% of it was just stock material. I mean, by the time you had the opening, each week, you're already like 10 minutes down out of a 20-minute show. So, but it gave Dana a couple interesting ideas for cosplay, so we'll have to see what she comes up with. You remember what was it, Rod and his amazing emu, you know, where he comes out and he's got like, it looks like he's got his hand around his giant stuffed Muppet-like emu, and of course his hand's actually in the emu.
Right.
And hilarity ensued.
Now, he used to show up on Carson.
Yeah.
And what it was, the emu would start destroying things and acting crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And he would attempt to control it and everything.
Of course, you can YouTube any of this if you want.
And Mark Evanier talked about how that guy, everybody thought he was going to have a huge career, but that was the only joke he had.
Yeah. Yeah. There's different situations, like how to wash his feet, how to paint, how to do whatever.
So he'd go on Carson and people go, wow, I can't wait to see his show. And he'd be somewhere and his act would be about 20 minutes long. And eventually this is what Evanier said. Eventually you just kind of fade it off because it's a good joke, but you need more than one joke.
Yeah.
Now I'm watching crappy Saturday morning TV as well. We are in the third season of Land of the Lost ETV.
Even something I won't do.
So the first season was great. The second season was okay. The third season, there is a big earthquake at the beginning of the season.
The greatest earthquake ever known.
No, this is the second earthquake.
Well, this is the greatest, I thought.
No, the first one that got him there was the greatest. This is Dad falls through the door of time. And Uncle What's-His-Name shows up. All of a sudden,
oh, Jack,
Chaka
he was searching.
Can talk. Chaka can talk.
And
the other Pakuti
if you also
are gone.
Notice, What's-His-Name, the actor, lost his last name and just called himself Wesley. And he,
No. He gained his last name. The first two seasons, he was just Wesley. Third season, he's Wesley Urey. Because I guess he wasn't showing up in the teen mags anymore.
And then, yeah, he could.
He made a lot of money in Teen Beat.
He could sing, too, I guess.
Well, they all could back then.
Yeah, well,
anybody who thinks that the boy bands of the 90s and 2000s were a new phenomenon, oh, no. No, 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 no.
Nope.
But anyway, the Chaka could talk. The other Pikuni were gone. The Sleestak could talk. They still had that noise going on, but they also had long conversations. Long, boring conversations.
Yes.
They didn't use the cave set anymore.
Nope.
They moved into a temple that they'd mapped out the whole land of the lost. But, oh, here's this new temple we've never heard of. And, no, it's the Sleestak's most holiest of places, even though they hadn't been in there for hundreds of years. Oh, my God, it's terrible.
And we're doing it.
There's a two-headed dinosaur.
You don't have to.
There's a two-headed dinosaur in the swamp. One of the things that I liked as a kid was the dinosaurs were all real. You knew them.
As real as dinosaurs.
Tyrannosaurus, okay. Allosaurus, Triceratops, all that, Brontosaurus. No, there were no two-headed dinosaurs. And then there's another dinosaur that breathes fire. So I'm hate-watching the show now. I'm watching it just to see how frell and horrible it's going to get. But that's not why we got together, Joe.
No.
Why did we get together?
To remind everybody that FallCon is on Saturday, October 4th. The One Day Wonder will be at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds Education Building. And
does that mean we're going to get edumacated?
We might. And to find out more, you can go to www.midwestcomicbook.com or send old Nick an email at mcba@aol.com.
And make it worth his time. He gets a lot of emails.
I think he's on his way to San Diego. Are we a week before that, or is that?
We're getting close to San Diego.
Yeah, because they always fill up a truck full of stuff, and him and Bob take it out to San Diego, and they usually come back with a truck with nothing in it. So they got that going for him.
There you go.
Which is nice.
You know who else is nice?
Who else?
These guys, our sponsors.
Ooh.
Crazy Comics and Stories is brought to you by DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And you can save $20 on your first year of web hosting. Just use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and you get $20 off your first year of hosting. Graze.com is healthy snacks delivered right to your door. And if you use the code CORY, S3R5P, that's C-O-R-Y, S3R5P, you get your first and fifth box free. Go to graze.com to find out more. If you want to contact us at Crazy Comics and Stories, you can. You can either go to our Facebook fan page at Crazy Comics and Stuff. You can email us at corey.strode@gmail.com, or you can call us at 952-856-0519. When you do that, we will read or play your comment on the air. If you want to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories, you can. Just go ahead and email me at corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. This is Brian Christman.
Shane Kelly.
Adam Murdo.
Matt.
Chris Eberle.
Peter Rios.
And we're from the Comic Geek Speak podcast.
On May 2nd of this year, our friend and fellow podcaster, Jamie D'Alessandro, lost his battle with cancer.
In honor of Jamie, we are participating in a 5K and 10K race to raise money for the Livestrong Foundation, which provides support for people with cancer.
We will be taking part in the Team Livestrong Challenge, Philly, on Sunday, August 17th in Blue Bell, Pennsylvania.
We are collectively running
and walking
under the team name of Jamie's Avengers.
If you'd like to join us in the event or make a donation to our team, go to livestrong.org and search for Jamie's Avengers.
Thank you all for your time and
Jamie's Avengers assemble!
And there we go. We're all done with the stuff that we have to do.
Yes.
So now we could talk about why you hate me.
Oh, there are so many reasons.
So I get a ticket to see a sneak preview of Guardians of the Galaxy.
With if I believe it's correct, 17 minutes of extra footage that nobody else will get to see.
That's right.
At least till the DVD release.
And I signed up, got my ticket, told Joe, hey, here's where you go to sign up and get your ticket. Did you sign up to get your ticket, Joe?
Nope. I had things going on that night.
And I told Joe, here you go. I'm going.
Yep.
He texted me back, I always hated you.
I did.
So last night I go.
And?
Now, it's at the other side of the city from my beloved, fair, beautiful Chaska.
Even though it was flooded, but.
No, we're not flooded anymore.
Yeah.
All the roads are open now.
Yep. Not all of them. Well, farther south they're not. But.
All the ones that I drive are.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. I might as well be a narcissist. I'm putting out 3 podcasts this week.
Yeah, yeah. You're trying to catch up with Mike Johnson, but no way that.
No. I'm trying to catch up with Comic Geek Speak. They're up to like 1,500 and something. Mm-hmm. We're going to catch up to them, Joe.
We will.
After, you know, we destroy all their equipment and record daily. But anyway, so I get off work and I proceed to drive in rush hour traffic through the worst corridor in the Twin Cities. Horrible storm hits while I'm driving.
Boom, 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 boom.
So a ride that right now, if I were to leave right now from my house and go to Roseville, it would take about 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It took an hour and a half from my work to Roseville. My work is like closer. I get there. It's still pouring rain. My umbrella is broken. The roommate I used to have broke the umbrella and just put it right back where it was. So I go to pick it up and it's the wooden part, the shaft as it were, waiting for Joe to make the inappropriate joke.
Nah, I'm not going for the low hanging fruit today.
Okay. My roommate broke my shaft. See, the crickets like it.
Well, we got to make sure they're awake.
So I get out of the car and it's pouring. And of course, you know, the parking lot's completely full, so I have to park far away. By the time I get up to the theater, you know how there are places in this country, Joe, that are plagued by drought?
Yes, we are not one of them anymore.
I should have taken my clothing there because I had enough rainwater soaked into my clothing that I could save the crops.
Mm-hmm.
I get in, and the lobby is full. The little atrium is full. It's packed. Crazy packed.
Did you see anybody you knew?
No.
Hmm.
But that doesn't mean anything. They could have been there because I'm serious. It was packed. I get there around 6. People are still showing up, you know, long after. But around 6:15, they come out and they let us know that the company that booked the preview triple booked it.
Huh.
I don't get in.
Aw.
I don't even get close.
You know I love you, right, Corey? In a manly sort of way.
Now, here's the better thing. Here's the better thing.
Ooh, even better. Free popcorn?
They say we may show it a second time.
But?
We don't know. We have to call Disney, and we haven't been able to get a hold of them.
You know, and you would think Disney would have somebody on the phone 24/7 just to answer in case some theater in the middle of Minnesota needed to call them.
But they say, now, write your email down, and Marvel has said that for everybody who doesn't get in, they'll take your email, they'll send you an email, they'll get your home address, and they will send you something.
Ooh, kind of like what I do.
So, yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, so the line starts going, and I get up, and it's this little teeny weeny PR woman. I mean, if she was 5 foot tall, I'd be shocked. If she weighed 90 pounds, I'd be amazed.
Mm-hmm.
She was small, SM all small. And I say, you know, do you know if they're going to show it again? Because yeah, I drove quite a long way to get here and I'm still, you know, it's been a half hour and I'm still just soaked. And she goes, well, we still haven't heard yet. And if we haven't heard by now, we probably aren't going to hear. But really, it's only the first 10 minutes and then a 17-minute interview with everybody. And I said, excuse me? It's only about 10 minutes? She said, yeah, they're still provisioning the 3D. The movie's not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they're only going to show the first 10 minutes of it. And I said, dude, because on my ticket it says, you know, the sneak preview. And she said, well, they're telling people in the theater now.
Yep.
I am glad I am not in that theater. Because I think it would have been a riot. I think if the poor little teeny PR woman was there, they would have captured her, tied her up, burned her at the stake.
You know, the funny thing was, though, is somebody at my work, I was telling them about that when you texted me, and they go, yeah, I heard about that. They're showing like the 17 minutes of the movie. I said, I thought they were showing the whole thing. No, just 17 minutes. And they knew about it before or about the same time you texted me. So, oh, well.
Yeah, it was not pretty.
Nope.
Not pretty. People were irritated.
I can imagine.
There was some anger.
Anger?
Anger.
There was anger in their eye, which ties in all the flood water.
But you used to get sneak preview tickets all the time at the comic shop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We never, and I used to let everybody else go because I was such a swell guy. I would stay home. I would stay and mind the shop while everybody else ran and did their freebies. Although occasionally I got a few of them. Didn't we see Starship Trooper that way?
We saw Starship Troopers that way. And I could swear, I thought you were at Mask of the Phantasm, but I guess you weren't.
No, I have yet to actually see that movie. Of course, I had one disadvantage is that I had seen the toy before the movie.
Yeah.
Which kind of like spoiled the big reveal in the movie.
But not every movie that you gave me tickets to was good.
No, that is very true.
Because I was there once when one of the PR people who hands those out was there. And they said that, well, what we do, we give them to like comic shops and record stores and things like that. Because the people who go to those places will talk about the movie afterward. So it's publicity. You know, the theater doesn't make money off it, but they don't make much money off showing a movie anyway. But we have it on a weekday, so they get full on a weekday, and those people buy a lot of food. So they're happy. Theater's happy. They're able to get out and get buzz going. And, you know, it's kind of a win-win. Except when the movie sucks.
True.
There were three that I remember could not suck enough. The first one I remember that I just thought this movie was free and it wasn't worth it was Lost in Space.
You know, I may have seen that one with you.
Oh, it was god awful, and the theater smelled like a Renaissance fair after a long weekend. It was pronounced. You know how people say the comic fans smell bad? No. The people who went and saw the Lost in Space sneak preview, it was body odor on a cosmic level. This was, if the Silver Surfer had body odor, this is the level of body odor there would be. And the movie was just stupid and long and not fun and so dull. The next one that I'm still angry about was Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
Ah, that was Joe Pesci, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I didn't see that one.
The preview, Howard Stern had just come to Minnesota, and members of the Whack Pack were coming to the airport, and they were going to do something. I don't even remember what they did, but they were coming to Minnesota to do some sort of publicity stunt. And it's, I'll go see this movie instead. I should have stayed home and punched myself. I would have had more fun than that movie. Every so often I see it turns up on cable, And it's, okay, what channel is showing that? Because I'm never going to watch that channel ever again. And the last one is a movie that I doubt people have heard of. It is For Better or Worse. And it came out when Seinfeld was huge. And it was a Jason Alexander movie. And he had done some publicity interviews where he's like, yeah, you know, I was really involved in picking the script. And we punched up the script. And I'm really proud of what I've done here. And it's a comedy with no laughs at all.
Kind of like Robin Hood Men in Tights.
No, Robin Hood Men in Tights was 100 times funnier. That's how bad this was.
I don't know. I went 30 minutes watching it, and we turned it off because we hadn't laughed once.
That sounds like Dracula Dead and Loving It, too. Sorry, Mel Brooks, pretty much after High Anxiety, I can't watch. And I know everybody likes Spaceballs. I don't. But For Better or Worse, he did all this publicity. I saw the sneak preview. It was just boring. It wasn't, you know, god-awful bad. It was just boring. Slow. And it's a 90-minute movie that felt like 5 hours. And normally when you see a sneak preview, it either comes out that weekend or the next weekend. And I remember it didn't come out, and 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 it didn't. Joe, it tested so poorly in those sneaks that 2 years later, they showed it as a made-for-TV movie on TNT. So they weren't, all the sneak previews weren't great. But we got to see a lot of really cool stuff. And the source, when they did the Star Wars movies, mm-hmm. when they re-released those, they made a big deal out of those. And that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know more about that than I do.
Well, I just remember Nick tells a story. We went to Harmar Mall, which was a movie theater where the source is now. It's since closed because they built a bigger, grander multiplex right up the road. But for the time, Harmar Theater was the premier theater. It had huge chandelier, shiny lights flashing all over the place. So as it was winding down, Nick would find ways to bring certain movies there. And they had the premiere for the Star Wars movies, and it was a big deal. We were giving away tickets, and they were giving away tickets, and you had to sign up because everybody wanted to get a piece of the action there. And I can't remember what was first. Was it the Batman movie or Batman and Robin or one of them? It might have been X-Men first. But it was,
no,
it was
Star Wars.
It was a comic book. No, there was a comic book movie first.
Because Star Wars was 97.
And then there was a...
And X-Men didn't come out till 2000.
And then there was another movie that came out that was more game-related. Or maybe just... It didn't have the big comic-related thing. Because Nick would tell the story about how the manager at Harmar would talk to Nick and say that his regional boss would call him and say, we just got your number for concession sales. They go, yeah, according to this, on this day, you did more on that day than you did the entire weekend before that. He goes, yeah, well, what happened? I said, well, we had, Star Wars playing and we had a sneak peek and all these fans came in and boy, they ate so much popcorn, we ran out. And then, of course, the next time Nick had a movie there, he gets up front and he's telling everybody, you know, the guys, the last movie we did, we had all the comic fans here and stuff. And they're telling me that they set a record for concession sales. And they're telling me that you guys aren't going to pass that. It's an entire first two rows of comic or Game Boys got up and said, no, that ain't going to happen. And they all went out there. So Harmar liked it when the source had their movie parties. And I'm surprised I'm sure Nick tried to figure a way to just buy the bloody thing and use it as his own revival house. But, you know, it's now, I don't know what it is. I just drove by there today and I still don't know what it is. Some type of shop.
I miss those sort of things. I miss when your comic shops would get involved and make a movie a big event.
Because I remember when X-Men came out, we partnered with like 93X and Fox 29, and we had the big movie ticket premiere. I've got a ticket around somewhere, and I might have even put it on my Facebook page where we got our logo up with everybody else's, and it makes you look really cool, you know, because here you are with a bunch of big name things, and of course, only two of the four shops are around anymore, but it was pretty fun. You know, you got to get in there quick and see it long before anybody else did. I remember going with my dad, and while he enjoyed the movie, he was still confused by a little bit. He didn't get the idea. He was waiting for an origin story, and it wasn't. No, the origin story is you're a mutant. You're just born with powers. Oh, that makes sense. But that saves in story writing, does it? Doesn't it?
Well,
somewhere
Stan
I think
always...
Stan Lee was just going, I feel a disturbance in the force.
Well, Stan always liked the idea that, hey, yeah, they're just born that way.
Yeah, Bart.
I don't have to think of another origin
never,
story.
Never last, born that way.
Of course, if you remember back when he was writing the X-Men, most of the X-Men's parents worked around nuclear material because nuclear material was magic back
then.
It
was. And apparently it is now, because judging by people protesting TSA, they think all these radio waves we're using are going to spontaneously combust and turn everybody into Hulks or something.
Well, I don't even want to get into conspiracy.
Never mind the fact that the cell phone you probably got sitting next to your groin right now is producing more radiation than we'll ever get. But
and your microwave oven and your old tube TV.
And the, not to mention the heat inside your body.
Every so often you have to put up with somebody that you don't want to have to put up with. Every so often I have to put up with a relative, not a blood relative, but through marriage, who believes all the conspiracy theories. He believes in chemtrails. He believes that the UN has already got a plan to put us all into camps.
Oh, that one's
true. He believes in the FEMA camps.
Oh, absolutely true.
Here's the thing. I wish they'd hurry up with the FEMA camps.
Well, that was only in the case of a nuclear war, in which case there wouldn't be much left of the major cities, and you'd probably be happy to be in a camp where at least you could eat and sleep.
Joe, please don't confuse conspiracy theorists with facts.
Oh, I'm
They're
sorry.
The ones who think that water vapor that is expressed from planes as they fly is actually mind-control chemicals.
Well, judging by what I emit lately at night, it drives my wife away. So apparently there might be some truth to that.
And for anybody who thinks that this stuff is brand new, no. You go back to the 50s and people were scared fluoride in the water was a mind control substance. Or watch Dr. Strangelove.
Mm.
The whole rant on the precious bodily fluids is lifted directly from the John Birch Society stuff. Kubrick was making fun of those people back before I was born, and that's a long time ago.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the reasons I didn't go to Guardians of the Galaxy...
Because you're a pussy?
No, I actually had a comic book-related reason.
What?
Well, not so much a reason, but a person.
Whoa.
As you know, careful, son. As you know, my daughter's getting ready to go to Italy for a year. So we were working on getting mostly my stuff, but her stuff from her apartment building back home here. And when my daughter, I didn't go help with the first load, but when she got here, she was telling me about this book she saw that had Joker and Carnage in it. And I had to stop and think about it. And I said, well, that was probably one of the Spider-Man Batman crossovers that they did.
Yep.
And she said, where did you see that? I said, well, kind of her on again, off again friend who's fun to date, but he wouldn't let her borrow it. So I said, well, we don't need to. We can go find it. So we
see if your dad knows enough about funny books, you don't need to date people. Wait a minute.
You're darn tootin', but she does anyways. So we went downstairs, and I was pretty sure it was Spider-Man and Batman, which came out first in 1995. However, we never did find it, we did find, however, the 1997 Batman Spider-Man. And that one, though, had, how do you say, Ra's al Ghul and the Kingpin in it. So
okay.
I sent her away with that. And then we also found a copy of Batman Captain America, which was in 1996.
Which I really liked.
Yeah, it was done by our good buddy and close personal friend, John Byrne.
What?
And, well, okay, well, John Byrne, he's not really friends with anybody. But the Batman Captain America takes place in the 40s, and it's kind of the original Batman, who had no problems handing out a smile now and then, because it was a, at that time in the 90s, Batman was kind of a brooding manhunter.
So it still is.
If you're looking for something good, check, see if you can find a copy of the Batman Captain America, because that one's actually worth picking up.
And it's set in the 40s.
The
Now, one of the things is Marvel and DC a while back reprinted all of their big crossovers in four books called the DC Marvel Crossover Classics. I'm looking at them here on the Amazon. And they're all pretty cheap. They're all, you can pick them up either new or used for about $16 to $17. And they go through all of the crossovers except DC versus Marvel, which was its own book, and the Amalgam books, which were also their own book. But they're all there.
Yep. I also sent her home with my beloved copy of Empire from DC Comics 2003. We've gone on and on about that book long time and long podcasts, and this one, of course, was Mark Waid with artist Barry Kitson. And again, from our friends at AtomicAvenue.com. And of course, they're not really our friends. Meet Golgoth, a masked warrior who led an army of downtrodden Aborigines to conquer first Australia, then Europe, Asia, and America. So he's got awesome weaponry and the astounding ability to teleport instantaneously to any part of the world. He's the villain. And the story starts, he's already won.
Yep.
So you can pick up early issues or just find the book. Again, they're not terribly expensive, but it's a property I'd like to see Mark Waid return to one of these years.
Well, guess what, Joe?
What?
In April 2014, the rights reverted back to Mark Waid.
Woohoo!
It will be part of Mark Waid's Thrill Bent platform. He is working on a sequel. He hasn't said if Barry Kitson's involved or not, but since Kitson was the co-copyright owner, I imagine he is. But it'll be part of his Thrill Bent, which is his online digital comics platform.
So we're talking going from Image's Guerrilla Comics imprint to DC to back to Mark. Ooh, I like this.
Yeah.
So I had important things to do Monday night.
Okay.
Yep. The other thing I ran across, and if you're interested, we can take a look at it. This is almost like a miniature Tales from the Shop.
Ooh.
Yeah. As I am slowly wading through my accumulation of crap, not to, you know, jump on Tony Isabella's accumulation of stuff, whereas he's got stuff, I tend to have just crap. I'm slowly going through my old business records, and as I've talked about in the past, you know, a lot of them, I've run across employee records with Social Security. I've run across people's credit card receipts. So I wore out my shredder a couple weekends ago, so I got a brand new cross shredder. And what I've been doing, though, is as I grab the invoices, I've just been kind of putting them aside because I thought it'd be interesting to kind of look at those because they kind of give you a snapshot of what that particular time and what was hot and maybe what was not. And if you indulge,
what's hot, what's not.
I picked one at random, and this was back with Diamond. And I believe this was the time when after the infamous Cap City, Heroes World, Marvel screwed everybody up wars, and Diamond came out the winner. It's dated May 2nd, 1998. And I'm not going to cover everything because, I mean, there's a lot of books in there, and some of them are probably disappeared and some for the better. But I was just looking at a few of them, Let's see. Batman Shadow of the Bat, if you remember that series. They were at number 76, at about 32 copies.
So that was nearing the end of that series,
yeah.
Actually.
Let's see. What else do we got here? Oh, this is...
So what was the regular Batman book selling in your shop?
See, now this is what the problem is. This is only today's snapshot, so I'm not even sure what Batman would have been. If Batman Shadow of Bat was 32, Batman probably would have been upwards of 50 to 60 copies.
Okay.
Underneath it's
not a month.
Right. Underneath, I got Batman The Gotham Adventures number 2. Oddly enough, that one was at 25 copies.
And that was based on the...
That was animated.
That was based on the cartoon.
Yep. And now it's interesting because next to it, I have a side note where Batman Shadow of the Bat, I had 32 copies and I had, 29 subscribers, which means I didn't put a hell of a lot of them on the shelf. Whereas Batman Gotham Adventures, I had ordered 25 copies and I had 8 people pre-signed for it. So I was either looking long-term at that one or I messed up. One of the two.
Or, you know, it was a kid's book, right?
Yeah, I just leave it out.
Those
cover
sold
price.
Over time.
Yeah, cover price right then was $1.95. And, I mean, I was getting a 55% discount, so I was pretty maxed out to begin with. One thing I had to chuckle at, Bone Bars and Box.
Oh, yeah, that's when they were doing candy bars at just about everything.
Yep.
Kitchen Sink, Trying to Survive.
I had, this must have been after the Marvel implosion because I got Cable number 56, 51 copies, and 8 for the shelf.
And that had an artist on it, Jose Ladron.
You know, that's pretty amazing, though. I mean, you think of 51 copies of Cable, and I only put 8 on the shelf, which means I really sold a lot of Cable.
Well, and I know that when Ladron took over the art, it went crazy. People thought, this is the next hot artist, even though the whole hot artist thing had died. And even, I think one of the reasons you upped your order was because I started buying it. And you were like, wait, you're buying Cable? You don't buy any X-Men books right now.
Gotta keep an eye on that one.
Look at the art. Look at the art.
Now, interesting, I had Cerebus 320. I only had 3 copies for the shelf. Or actually, I ordered 3 copies, and 2 of them were already spoken for. So.
Yeah, by then people were just buying the trades.
Yeah, and I know at one time I had as many as 13 people buying Spawn. So I think it was kind of going down. And the trades, of course, when those came out, I'd have boxes of them myself, which was crazy. Curse of Spawn, number 19. I had 50 copies, 17 went on the shelf.
Who was the writer on Curse of Spawn, Joe?
Do you remember? He never lasted. He came and disappeared.
Brian Michael Bendis.
Yep.
That was that and Sam and Twitch were his first really big gigs. Let's
see, Daredevil 377, 18 copies, 17 went on the shelf. That can't be right. Maybe.
You're wrong.
Yeah, maybe about that age. Let's see if I can find Divine Right, 50 copies, 20 for the shelf. I think that was Jim Lee's book, wasn't it?
Yes, that was one that Jim Lee drew, and I remember it. You'd put them on the shelf, and nobody was buying. There was a time when Jim Lee would do a book, and no one cared.
This is May 98. This book was solicited December 97.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure most of these books went back.
Yep.
Let's see. Flipping down.
And I don't think – have they reprinted that?
I don't think so.
You keep talking. I'm going to look up.
All right. Fantastic Four, number 7. 13 copies on the shelf out of 73. So that was a big, big seller. I believe this was after the whole Heroes Reborn. Or no, was it Heroes Return when Marvel took back the hero.
And their books got really good, you know, because you had Kurt Busiek and George Perez on Avengers. Gosh, I forget who drew Iron Man, but it was written by Kurt Busiek. Chris Claremont and Carlos Pachenko on Fantastic Four.
Here's an interesting one.
I can't remember the other one.
Frank Frazetta, Fantasy Illustrated, number 2. And I must have been thinking long term on this one because I ordered 13 and put 8 on the shelf. And I don't recall, I don't actually remember how that sold or how many issues that baby went, but that was like, they were trying to compete with the same market that Heavy Metal was working at.
Yeah. And I remember it was like a 48 page comic for $9. How much was it? Cause that'll have the cover price on it, right?
Yeah. $5.95.
Oh,
most comics
wow,
were about $2 then.
Yeah. But it was 48 pages. And it was $6, and it had a Frazetta cover, and then a bunch of people, you know, a bunch of guys named Joe Brony working on the inside.
Yeah.
I am looking. Okay, Amazon does have Divine Right. It was put into a paperback in March of 2002 and is currently out of print.
Uh-oh.
A Jim Lee book out of print.
Shocking.
And if you want to pick it up, you can pick up a used copy for $7.16.
Divine
a
Right.
A new copy is $10.99.
Divine Right started in 97. Max Faraday, a 20-year-old physics undergrad, has trouble talking to women, few friends, and works as a pizza boy to fund college. When demon hounds try to kill him and his buddy, his problems really begin. And he has a downloaded encrypted file stolen by somebody, places on the internet. He becomes the conduit for the creation equation. And apparently they only went to 12 issues.
Yep, they did 12 issues.
And the last one seemed to be a crossover with somebody.
With
probably
pretty much
everybody.
Everything.
Yeah, one of those deals.
And
Let's see.
I think I saw something about how 2013, Jim Lee said he was bringing it back.
Mm, that's good to know.
So that was a year ago.
Let's see. Frank Frazetta, Ant Fantasy Illustrated. Let's see. They went to 8 mighty copies. And number 8 had a limited edition from Wizard World Chicago and an alternative cover. So that did not last too long. But the number 1 started out big. I mean, it had Richard Corbin, Joseph Linsner, William Stout, Wendy Pinney, Joe Jusko.
Oh, wow.
Because
I remember it coming out, and I'm going, I don't know, don't know anything.
It was even an Eisner variant cover, which, if you have one, is a $50. All the variant covers seem to be expensive. Like the number 1 is a $50 variant. The number 2 special cover is $65. Number 3 is $65. So before you toss them covers away or recycle them, double check online to make sure you don't have one of the special covers because you may have something there worth selling.
Huh.
Let's see what else we had here. Green Lantern, 1963, annual number 1.
Oh, that was when DC would reprint the, the annuals, except they ran out of annuals, so they started making them up. And as well, this is what we would have
done,
printed
yeah.
if we would have done. And those are fun. You know, they're nice little
reprint
books.
Out of 20 copies, 10 people did it, so I figure I broke even on that one.
Yeah, I bought that.
Now, I also have here, it says Hepcats New Printing Number 10. Hepcats was an independent book done by a guy, Martin Wagner. He drew it originally for his college newspaper. And it's centered around an exotic dancer and her harried boyfriend. It got real deep towards the end, and I don't believe anything went beyond number 12.
Yeah.
And,
these were reprints, and they were basically reprinting it, and he was going to start it again. And then they got to issue 12, and nobody could find him anymore.
Well, the weird thing was,
dropped out the face
for
of the earth.
For a while, I actually had a correspondence with him where I actually bought stuff from him directly. And it was kind of weird because I said, you know, I'm interested in this stuff, and he sent me a whole bunch of stuff, and then it was like I didn't have his address to send him a check, and then I got it must have been email. He said, "Hey, you ever gonna send me a check?" And I go, "Yeah, send me your address, I'll send it back." So, but I mean, I ordered directly from the guy just to keep it going, but like you said, it disappeared. But these were a type of books that I would try to keep in stock, just because I tried to keep all the independents that were in stock and tried to keep them at cover price too. So, you know, a first print Bone might go up in price, but if I could keep the other ones in print, and that was before the, you know, graphic novels take out. Nowadays, you probably wouldn't even bother. You would just, hey, if I sell out, I sell out, pick it up in the graphic novel.
I have just found his webpage, by the way.
And?
The last thing he wrote was on December 20th, 2010, where he says, here we are a year later. It had been a year since his last post. And still no news. People must remember that Hepcats is no longer what I do for a living. It's not even high on my leisure time list. Right now I have a documentary feature I'm putting together, working as an assistant director and production assistant on various films and TV projects to pay the bills. I regret the enthusiasm with which I announced the completion of Snowblind as a webcomic a few years ago. Not because I don't intend to do it, but because announcing it inevitably meant that people would build it up of expectations of a quick, if not immediate, delivery, and it would also be misinterpreted as an announcement that I'm returning to comics. This is not happening. So,
speaking of adult comics, I know. Apparently, I ordered something called
Men Like?
Hustler Comics.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah,
ugh.
And I'm trying to find out how many actually came out. I have number 7 here, but I can't find it actually online.
I'll say this, though. Penthouse Comics, even though Penthouse Magazine always felt very skeevy, Penthouse Comics in the beginning had some really good stuff. They had, I got to look it up. I think Adam Hughes drew for them.
Mm-hmm.
They got some big name artists.
Here's something fun. Previews on disc, 3.5 floppy.
Whoa.
And I paid $3 for it.
Here we go. Here are some of the artists who worked for Penthouse Comics. Adam Hughes, Gary Leach, Kevin Noland, Arthur Saddam, Milo Manara, who probably they just reprinted his stuff, Richard Corbin, Bart Sears, Gray Morrow. Gray Morrow's stuff was actually really fun in that. It did well enough that they started Omni Comics, if I remember right.
Okay.
I'm looking it up here. And then there was an editor who was involved early on who started getting some really erratic behavior. And after he got rid of the managing editor, and after he left, pretty much the top name artists abandoned work, and it fell apart. Penthouse Comics was, they also had Men's Adventure Comics, which was then titled Penthouse Men's Adventure Comics, and a 3-issue Omni Comics. So, but Hustler Comics, I remember it coming out, and
I only ordered that for whoever ordered it. I didn't even bother putting one on the shelf. Let's see other titles. Invisibles, Volume 2, Number 16.
Wonder who would have pushed that.
Yep. JLA Year 1, Number 7.
That was a fun book. Mark Waid and Barry Kitson again.
Kazar 15. I don't remember it.
I think that was after Mark Waid left, because that was when Mark Waid did the book, and I'm amazed Marvel hasn't reprinted it, it was Kazar versus Thanos, and it worked.
Yeah. This must have been dying because I had 20 copies, but only, well, that's still pretty solid. 20 copies, 7 on the shelf.
Yeah, but after Mark Wade left.
Kent's number 12, the last of that miniseries.
Which is phenomenal. Cannot recommend it enough.
And you'll probably recommend this next one. Mage the Hero Defined number 7.
Never heard of it.
Now from, we are talking, this is May in 98. It is was solicited for November 97.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good. I mean, 27 copies. I only put 8 on the shelf, so people were picking it up.
Which means, when was that?
This was 98.
Yeah. So, longer wait between books 2 and 3 than between 1 and 2. Hey, Matt Wagner, get the damn book done.
Let's see, Marvel Team Up 11 must have been dying because 16 copies, I only put 4 on the shelf.
Yeah, that run didn't do well.
Nightwing 22, 35 copies, 7 for the shelf. Concrete from Paul Chadwick, Strange Armor number 5, 20 copies, 9 on the shelf.
That's a book I wish was still coming out.
Let's see. Loved Power of Shazam number 40. Oh, Preacher was still being published.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 26. Oh, wow. I had a lot of people. I don't put 3 on the shelf. That was a lot of people for that one.
I remember it didn't much do. It didn't sell on the shelf. It was subscriber only.
For a while. And then
the trades came out.
Yeah.
And people.
And I used to, the trades would just go. I mean, people would come and start with 1, 2, 3. The series was going on. This wasn't the original run. This, I think, was the second run. Sensational Spider-Man 29. There's a title called Snowman from Matthew Martin. A bizarre snow creature is wrecking havoc in a small backwood town. I remember this one being really hot. The first issue was crazy
it
hot.
All.
It was done a lot in the Image type style and went from his own self-publishing. I think maybe a couple issues might have come out of Image. I don't know. But nobody knows now. Let's see what else we got here.
I can't even find it on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it might have been. I'm reading it off Atomic Avenue. Spirit of the Tau from Image by Bill Tan, Doi Trong, and Hyoi Trong. Let's see. The good guys are called the Jicaps, a handful of which survive today. They were schooled by their master to fulfill their destiny. On their 18th birthday, they were to confront a group called the Tau Hunters, who sought to test their mettle before allying themselves to begin the fight anew against a great evil. And this one went 15 copies and might have finished because it says a final issue and doesn't really indicate anywhere beyond that. So check your quarter box. Let's see, to round up the S's. Starman was still rocking, which was a phenomenal series. The final issue of Steel, we talked last podcast about how to order final issues, it was number 52. I had 7 copies. I put 1 on the shelf.
Yeah.
And I probably closed the store with it still in my box.
And that was a comic that actually had a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still haven't seen that movie, but
I'll find you copy if you want.
Why?
Stormwatch 6, Superman 136. Tales of the...
How sad is it that Stormwatch, nobody cares until issue 38?
No.
When Warren Ellis takes over the book and says, all right,
Werewolf,
let me show you how it's done.
Werewolf by Night had their own series. Only 2 people subscribed to it.
I was one of them.
Yep. Wetworks number 40. X-Men.
See, so there were still some imagey.
X-Men.
There were still
manga?
Some of those early 90 imagey books.
Yeah, and then I had X-Men manga. Ugh.
Yeah, that reprinted the,
I put 2 on the shelf, and I'm pretty sure it didn't sell.
Yeah. They reprinted the Spider-Man manga and the X-Men manga, and the X-Men manga was okay. The Spider-Man one was just weird. He was like a middle-aged salaryman with a evil twin, and I remember I tried reading the Spider-Man manga, and after like four issues, and I read manga. After four issues, it was, I don't know what the hell is going on, and this is not Spider-Man. I'm tapping out.
Let's see. The last couple titles I'll mention, there was X-Files Season 1 Fire, 7 copies, 4 on the shelf.
That was a square-bound thing, right?
Yeah, a little digest size.
Yep, they were reprint. They were adapting episodes of the show.
And that was probably something I bought just to leave on the shelf permanently.
Yeah.
Xena Warrior Princess was going, and this was the Callisto miniseries. Ooh, the actress was super hot.
And I remember that comic sold really well.
It did.
And I watched a couple episodes of the show, and it was really terrible. It looked like it cost about $1.50 an episode.
Now, there's a couple things I had notes, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 14. I had 6 for the shelf. I ordered 6 because nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
By this time, everybody dropped it. There was a series called 10th. And apparently,
another Image book.
I screwed up because I had to reorder it.
Oh, wow.
But the big book of the day was Thor number 1.
Oh, that's right.
Yep, that was the book of the day. I say this because I ordered, 94 copies. I put 70 on the shelf, but they had an incentive going on where they sent me 38 free copies. And then they sent me various collector items copies. And then there was a Sunburst variant that it must have been 1 in 5 or something, because I got like 26 of those, and I put 21 of those on the shelf. So that was kind of the big thing. So we're talking, what do we got here? Let's see, 150 plus copies. I ordered near 100, and I got variants and the super variants and 40 free ones. And
it was drawn by John Romita Jr.
Yep. And I'm pretty.
See, written by Dan Jurgens, drawn, penciled by John Romita Jr.
I am pretty damn sure I probably sold the snot out of all those. So the other fun thing that we had, and I talked about this various times, is, you know how Diamond would always have their, liquidation thing, and I was able to get on there first, either by placing an order online or faxing it in or whatever it took. Soon as I knew that order was available, that was the first thing I did was send it off. And this one, I must have gone manga crazy, because they were blowing out manga at 50 cents a pop. We're talking titles like Battle Angel Alita, Bio Booster Armor Giver, Fist of the North Star, Mason Akiku, Manga Vision. This is how I built up my manga. And this was before it was all in book form. It was still in comic book form. Nasika, The Valley of the Wind, No Need for Tenchi, 1 Pound Gospel, Rama 1/2. You're talking probably 2 of every copy they had available. And I just loaded up with stuff. A lot of Vampirilla, some Wildcat trade paperbacks for $1 a piece. And that's how I was able to, you know, fill a 3,800 square foot store. And I look at some of the fun things. I picked up something called Adventures of Superman Collecting, which I would love to know what it was, because it was $90. And I picked up Batman Rogue Gallery action figure box sets. They sold for like $70 a pop, and they were blowing them out for $50. That was like a red set jail cell, red like a brick. And you opened it up, and inside were all the figures based on the aforementioned Batman animated series in like a jail cell. A bunch of Crow, City of Angels, shot glasses, keychains, a Crumb original soundtrack CD. I mean, this was just my geeking going on here. Cause I mean, just fun stuff, t-shirts, a Tex Avery Wolf lamp. I would love to know who bought that. So, So anyways, that was a snapshot of what happened May 2nd, 98. If you folks are interested in us digesting things like that, I've got like 12 years worth of invoices to go through eventually. And I'll save them aside. We'll pull one out occasionally and talk about things like that. It brings back.
Well, you know what that means, Joe.
It means it's time for me to turn the shredder on and get rid of this invoice. Ah, never to be seen again. Huh. I got a note.
And now it's time for freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking about? What's freaking you out? What's causing you problems? What are you bothered by?
Well, other than the fact as you can hear, my current shredder's working fine, but I did kill my old one. But.
I don't need a shredder. I have a cat.
I have one thing I'm freaking on this week.
Yes.
In my box of stuff, I picked up a dollar variant, and it happens to tie into apparently a movie coming out, or not a movie, but a TV series coming off FX. It's called The Strain. It's a 2009 vampire horror novel by, help me with the name, Guillermo?
Guillermo del Toro.
Thank you. And Chuck Hogan. And apparently there's a trilogy. And it's going to be a television series that's should be coming out broadcast on FX. I had copy of the promotional poster, which had a picture of an eyeball and something wormish crawling out of it that apparently made a lot of people really squeamish. So naturally, I took a copy of it and I'll put it on my Facebook page. But I took the dollar comic and I read it, and it's actually kind of interesting. And so I handed it to my wife and said, well, here, give this a try. See what you think. Cause apparently my daughter Dana knew about it and she was real excited. My wife's kind of like, looks interesting. Well, she went out and she actually bought the books that night when she was giving Dana a ride home. She stopped by, Barnes and Noble and picked up the first installment in the Strain trilogy. And I think she went and picked up the second one, if I'm not mistaken. So naturally, always one to wanting to, you know, get her into comics. I said, well, you know, I think they got a comic adaptation of it. Would you be interested? No. And my daughter and I are like, what? Nah, not interested. So, you know, this is the, you know, a couple weeks ago, we were kind of like, we were like, hey, let's stop at the source and you can buy something. I don't want to. Yeah, but me, Holly, and Dana do. Nah, I don't want to. You know, I walk into a wine shop with her, and I can at least find out of all the wines and beers and stuff, I can find one thing I like. She can't walk into a comic store and try. I mean, if that's not, that's what I'm freaking on. Corey, what are you freaking on? Tell me what's bugging you. What's got you honked off?
I have a few things. So first, Marvel in the new previews has announced their Epic Collections.
Yeah, I saw those.
Which are what they're going to be using to replace the essentials. They cost $40 each. They don't have as many issues. Oh, but they're in color.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to replace everything again.
I'm not going to, because one of the reasons I liked the essentials is because they were cheap. They were big and they were cheap. So I didn't feel bad about taking them, you know, throwing them in the car or taking them to the gym or, you know,
dropping one in the bathtub while you're trying to prop it up on your knees.
Well, I don't take baths because, you know, I'm a guy, but I like the fact that it was this big bunch of comics for cheap. And now if I want my old comics looking wonderful, guess what? I'm going to buy the Masterworks.
Yes.
I could get two of the Amazing Spider-Man Masterworks, which has more than this Epic Collection, for less than the price of this Epic Collection. And I know that this stuff is not aimed at me, but it still torques me off that I've lost my essentials.
Yeah.
The thing that was so great about the essentials were they were dirt cheap. So, you know, when my son was young, I got him The Amazing Spider-Man, first volume. Here you go. This will keep you busy for a few days.
Yeah, I bought Godzilla for my nephew.
He spilled soda on it, or he took it outside and left it in the rain. Didn't matter. It was $12. Big deal. These books, these are, you know, for libraries and stuff like that, and that's fine. It's just not the same. I like the fact that the essentials were, I don't want to say disposable, but they felt like old comics, and they were printed on the same paper as old comics. They were printed on newsprint, and many of the real Silver Age stuff, when the artist drew it, they drew it to be on newsprint. And especially Ditko's stuff looks so much better in black and white. Kirby's early stuff on the Marvels looks so much better in black and white than in color. But everybody wants color. Pat Gruber has won.
Pat Gruber won. Good man.
I see that IDW is reprinting the Gold Keys Star Treks again.
Yeah.
Giving them the archive. You know, putting them into big, nice books. Joe, I remember when Checker reprinted the Gold Key Star Trek books.
I had those.
And I bought them. And did you read them, Joe?
I tried.
They are god-awful.
Yeah.
They were drawn by people in Europe who'd never seen the show, who just, you know, they were given some stills so that the actors would look like they were supposed to. And here's some pictures of the spaceship. But they, you know, the Enterprise is landing on a planet. People are coming out of the front. And it, especially the first, like, 20 or so issues, it's unbelievably clear that the people involved have never seen an episode of the show.
Yeah.
Now, later on, toward the end of the run, Len Wein wrote the book. And they're better, but it's very clear that this was Len Wein at the beginning of his career trying to find out how to write a story. But these books do not need to be in beautiful, hardcover, lovingly restored books. They're crap. Okay? They're crap. Next thing I'm geeking on, Joe, have you watched the Marvel shows?
Freaking,
I'm sorry, yeah. Freaking. Have you been watching the Marvel shows on the Disney XD?
Negative.
Ultimate Spider-Man, really good.
Yes.
I like that series a lot.
I think that was a fun one.
Avengers Assemble.
Absolutely.
Like that show.
Love it.
Hulk and the Agents of Smash distills everything I hate about kids' cartoons and the direction they've taken the Hulk over the last 10 years. Every story is about Rick Jones learning a lesson. And there are way too many goddamn Hulks. You got Hulk, you got Red Hulk. Rick Jones is now a Hulk. You got the son of Hulk. Except in the show, he's not really his son. It's confusing. You got She-Hulk. Not the She-Hulk that we... I can't... It's She-Hulk. They haven't brought in Red She-Hulk. But Marvel... You have too many goddamn Hulks. And Rick Jones shouldn't have superpowers. Thunderbolt Ross shouldn't be a Hulk.
That was fun when it happened, but he didn't need to remain it.
Betsy Ross shouldn't be a Hulk.
Hated it.
Son of the Hulk. You know, we had all this crap about how Spider-Man can't be married because it makes him old. Hulk's son is in his 20s. That puts the Hulk in his 40s or early 50s. Makes me mad. You're a big fan of the Simpsons game, right?
Oh, big time.
Simpsons Tapped Out. I like it, too. But after they had their last big event, the Stonecutter event.
Mm-hmm.
I did not finish. Didn't even come close. And I have the maximum number of friends. There was all this other hidden stuff, and there was stuff you had to pay money for. Now, in their previous events, as long as you did all the things you were supposed to, you could get all of the main items. Not in this one. I was very disappointed and very upset.
I was kind of the other way on it, because I guess I was nuts, because there were certain times one of the characters, number one, who in the show is voiced by Patrick Stewart, who in the game is voiced by nobody, he would give certain tasks to certain people. These tasks would go anywhere from 1 to 8 hours. So if it was 1 in the morning, basically at midnight, the tasks reset. So you could do 4 tasks a day, earning anywhere from like 25 to 400 points, depending on whatever you're doing. The first task of the day, if it was 1 hour, I would wake up 1 hour later, collect the emblems or the points, and then set another task. So if it's set for 4 hours, I would wake up. I mean, I was nuts these 3-4 weeks. I was obeying this dumb fictional character and tapping on him and my friends and everything else. So I was like maxing these things out. I even went nuts and dropped $20 on donuts and got some of the premium items, which
yeah,
I didn't in the last event, I guess, their Easter event, I was reading online where guys were telling you had to collect certain number of eggs and then you traded them in for like a shot of yeah, winning premium items. You had to do it 80 times to get some of the more sought after items.
Yeah.
And I was like, I did the math. That was like $50 worth of donuts, you know, the premium currency or whatever the hell it is. Yeah, that one was out of control. But this one I had fun on just because I went a little nuts and I would sneak my break at work. Like, okay, let's see. Everything gets done at 4 o'clock. So I'll take my break at 4:05 and reset all the characters. Oh, damn it. I got to get it done at 5 o'clock. So
yeah, I'm not waking up in the middle of the night to play a game.
I'm not
and
saying,
the last thing
I'm not saying
on.
I set myself. I just did. And I was like, well, I might as well go ahead and do it. But I
the
had
the last
fun.
Thing I'm freaking on, Joe. It's not on the list I gave you because
because you didn't want me to
last,
a major mockery.
Last week's Captain America had a scene where the Falcon and oh, what's a
woke up with
name?
A 23-year-old.
Yeah, and the internet lost its collective shit because when she was introduced, she was 12, and nobody has read the story. Because if you read the story, you knew that Captain America was trapped in Dimension Z for 10 years. So, yes, when she was introduced, she was 12 years old. 10 years passed with Cap in Dimension Z, so she's now 23. And her and the Falcon get drunk and sleep together, which I don't know. I guess that never happens with 23-year-olds.
God, I hope not. Dana's 21. I'd hate to think that would happen while she's in Italy.
But people lost their collective shit.
You know how well it worked for Amanda Knox.
They wanted him fired because underage, statutory rape. The Falcon has now committed statutory rape. And Marvel, on one of the Marvel editors, on his Tumblr page said, here's the page where at the bottom she says, I just turned 23. Oh, no, that didn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Facts don't get in the way. And I imagine that most of the people who got on the Fire Rick Remender Twitter hashtag and wrote the columns of anger and hadn't read the book.
Yeah. It didn't matter. Don't confuse me with facts.
Somebody told them something, and they decided to run with it. It's like all the other comic book news sites where facts don't matter. We read it somewhere. We're mad. We want comics to be for adults.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well.
Act like one.
How about a character who makes a poor choice?
Never have.
And engages in some off-stage adult activity that happens literally every night on network TV dramas.
But never when I was in college. Damn.
But damn it.
Now I got another.
We want Rick Remender's head on a pole. And the thing that really annoys me, that I just, the people who, well, yeah. Sure, they said she's 23 in the story, but that doesn't make it any better.
No. Ugh. Idiots, the lot of them.
I talk about it a lot in other contexts, but there seems to be a group of people on this planet who wake up every day going, what can I be outraged about? What can I decide is the most horrible, important thing that I can be pissed off
about?
And
they're not going after targets that we would applaud, such as the aforementioned third season, Land of the Lost.
Right. Or, you know, the fact that there are all these yabos down in Texas now who are taking off the pollution control things on their car to stick it to the hippies. Or, you know, the companies that are saying, oh, well, you know, sorry, our religion says that we don't have to do shit.
Or the fact that we will never, ever see another issue of Hoverboy, the Republican superhero.
The fact that it's been 15 fucking years since an issue of Mage came out. No, they're going to get mad about, oh, the fictional character slept with a fictional woman, and I'm outraged because I heard that she might be underage, and I don't care if the story says she's 23, it's still wrong.
And she worked at Hobby Lobby.
Ugh. So, Joe, after that good inspired rant, what are you geeking on? What are you loving? What are you enjoying? What do you hold close to your bosom and go, this is why I enjoy my hobby?
Do you hear that?
Yes.
That was Frank Miller's Big Damn Sin City.
Now, I hadn't heard of that because I haven't been reading previews for a while. I just started reading previews again.
I'm going to kill small mammals with this.
Is that like all the Sin City stories in one big book?
I do believe it is. It's a total of 7 graphic novels, all written and drawn by Frankie. I cannot wait to kill something with this.
I love Sin City. I know that a lot of people are...
it's fun reading.
They don't get what he's doing. He's doing 50s crime novels as a comic. So the stories are very much that the kind of stuff that Hardcase Crime prints.
If anything, you know, I would freak about is
who
what
makes
happens
a stupid mistake
with some of the characters, you know, because you're thinking, okay, that was a good story, but I wish there was more.
Yeah.
So anyways, I was so surprised when
the art is so good.
I totally forgot I ordered it.
So you were very happy when it showed up.
Yep. I mean, it's a little ding.
Your wife was not too happy about the price tag. You haven't told her, have
no,
you?
No. She didn't need to know that.
And how much will you pay me to make sure she doesn't know it?
I will give you one thing off my desk.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like I'm doing everybody else. I finally opened it up and watched it. Star Blazers, $21.99. And this is the... Blu-ray based on the original anime Star Blazers, but it's way updated. First of all, there isn't just one woman on the ship. There are plenty of women on the ship. Top-notch animation, super crisp on Blu-ray. Apparently limited edition, they only made like 2,000 of these things. It's got English subtitles, but I don't care. It was a blast to watch. It covers the first 4 episodes. And I don't know if the second batch is available. I haven't seen it advertised. I know I can go get the version from Japan, but I don't believe it has the subtitles. Or if it does, it's wildly expensive. What they're doing is they're releasing each episode of Star Blazers in the theater, and then they release it as a DVD. And for us American people who don't like that, they're putting apparently 4 of them together and running it that way. So if you go to starblazers.com, I imagine they'll tell you more about picking these up. So I watched it, and it was a blast. For free, I picked up a copy of Johnny Carson's Henry Bushkin, as you talked about.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
I had a bunch of eBay bucks. Someone had it for $4, so I picked it up. And now, because I actually got to do something this week that I haven't done in a long time. I actually got to read comic books. And rather than just geek and freak on every one of them, I'll just kind of blow through them quickly and just kind of give you a one sentence, I don't know what I was thinking about when I read them. For example, I read the Knights of the Dinner Table 208, which I absolutely love. If you're a gamer, you really should pick this up. Bob Fingerman's Minimum Wage number 6. Enjoy the heck out of it. Of course, that's the last issue for a while. All New X-Men 28, Uncanny X-Men 22. Don't know where Bendis is going, but I think I got a clue. New Avengers 19, same thing with Hickman, just enjoying it, not sure where he's going. Savage Dragon 195, original Savage Dragon's gone. This is his son Malcolm, kind of like a new comic starting over. Star Trek, Harlan Ellison, City on the Edge of Forever. Just reading this book, I can understand why they couldn't produce it in a 1960s television budget. But if they did it nowadays, it would be phenomenal. Cyclops number 2, lots of fun. Silver Surfer 3, becoming my favorite. Guardians of the Galaxy number 16, they're in the middle of a multi-part adventure. Much better than what Corey tried to see. Justice League 31, I'm always down on DC, but I think I'm going to stick with Justice League for a while. This one actually surprised me. And I kind of screwed myself because after 31, I didn't order anymore. So I'm just going to have to pick them up as they come out. Archie 656. I really love reading it, especially after reading Afterlife with Archie. Fantastic Four number 6 is part 1 of an original Sin tie-in. I don't know what the Sin is, but I'm not impressed with it so far. Savage Hulk 1. Is Alan Davis doing this one indefinitely, or is it just going to be an anthology?
It's another one like Savage Wolverine, where it's different creators doing different story arcs.
Okay, I'll stick around for Davis, but the rest has got to impress me. Battlestar Galactica 12, the original. If you like it, pick it up. Original Sin 3 and 4. Got a little spoiled that time, and I've been enjoying this crossover. Really cool. And then, of course, Avengers 31, which is an original Sin tie-in. And the oddball of the bunch, New Avengers Annual number 1, a total Doctor Strange story. Little darker than most Doctor Strange stories. I liked it. And then one that I think I'll defer to Corey and let him talk about geeking, Superman number 32. With that, Corey?
Well,
what are you geeking on? What's got you chilling and thrilling? What's got you excited beyond belief as Christina Hendricks wearing nothing but pie? Ooh, I think I excited myself on that one.
I may need to leave the room. We got an email this week.
We did.
And one of the people who has taken Joe up on his offer, which he'll talk about at the end of the show.
I will.
But one of the things he says here is, while I can't say I agree with you on DC Comics or politics, I often appreciate your perspectives on comic history and the rest of comicdom. So I've been bagging on DC a lot, Joe.
We both have been, which is why I was super pleased when I read JLA 31.
I picked up Superman 32 because John Romita Jr., Jeff Johns doing Superman. Now, the last Superman book I read was just Superman, Superboy, Supergirl in Action Comics Annual, where there was no action. It was somebody lecturing them for page after page after page after page. I picked up Superman 32, and I loved it.
Me
too. They introduce a new character who's got a very, very similar origin as Superman. And we don't know if he's going to be like a villain or a hero or what. John Romita Jr.'s art was very Kirby-like. Lots of motion, lots of big action. Everything seemed big and important. Clark Kent wasn't a whiny little wuss bag, which is the reason I haven't liked Superman in the New 52. Superman was drawn like a grown-up, not like he's some gawky 18-year-old who hits the gym a lot. Jimmy Olsen, we found out more about the new Jimmy Olsen character in this one issue than we have in the last 3 years. It was a perfect setup issue in that there are all these different story hooks, and I can't wait to read the next issue. And I can't tell you how long it's been since I felt that way about a DC comic. This is what I want from a Superman comic. I want action. I want Superman being an interesting character. I want his supporting cast to have things going on. And it wasn't mopey and whiny and dark and depressing and drawn like Jim Lee's second cousin copying his stuff. This was a great first issue of a comic book. And I'm hoping that this is the start of something really cool at DC, as when they bring in new creators on the books, that they're actually able to do their own stuff rather than draw like Jim Lee and write like it's 90s X-Men. The other DC book I read, I finally sat down and read the whole story of Forever Evil. Was it worth taking 10 months to do 7 issues? No. Did I like the art? No, it was second-rate Jim Lee. Too much of the story happened offstage. But I like where they ended it. It was a nice little, okay, we're setting things up. They've set up that Crisis is coming. They've set up that Lex Luthor is now, everybody thinks he's a hero, but he's got something really dark he's doing. They've set up that Lex Luthor is a multifaceted character instead of, I hate Superman. Why? Because I hate Superman. Well, why? I hate him. The story itself was an okay read, but I like how it kind of set the table for, okay, big stuff is coming. I have one worry, and we're going to get into spoilers. There's the spoiler noise. You've read it, right, Joe?
Yeah. Oh, Joe? Yeah.
Okay. Are you paying attention, or are you playing on the Facebook?
I am actually paying attention.
Okay. So you read where they kind of set up the anti-monitor.
Yes.
And they say that the anti-monitor eats universes.
Which apparently scared the crap out of Darkseid. Which could explain what Darkseid's doing.
Doesn't that kind of make him Galactus only bigger?
Yeah, that's kind of what he was to begin with.
No, he wasn't eating the universes, he was destroying them. And in the original Crisis, he didn't say much. He was more this very mysterious cosmic entity. And now he feels like a knockoff of Galactus.
Well, wait and see what happens. Because right, the original one, it was, you know, the more universe, the more positive universes died, the stronger he became. At the same time, the monitor,
the antimatter universe became more powerful. It wasn't just him.
Now we'll see.
It was his universe.
Do the monitors still exist?
We haven't seen the monitor. That I know of.
Because I remember in Final Crisis we saw monitors, but that has nothing to do with the New 52.
Right.
Okay.
And Joe, I'm going to give you my last geeking, and it is not on the list because I just found out about it right before the show started.
That a cooked human cadaver contains about 81,500 calories?
No.
Oh.
There is a toy company called Mighty Mugs.
And they're making a ROM doll.
They are making a ROM figure that you will be able to get at the San Diego Comic-Con. And of course, comic fans are like, they're bringing back the ROM comic!
No, this is Hasbro doing it.
Hasbro's putting out the toy. And they may just be putting out the toy to make sure they retain their trademark and copyright and all that. But they're putting out a ROM toy, which means Marvel may be able to start talking to them about, hey, you know, we'd like to reprint this stuff. Would that be okay? So, I don't really go for toys, and I don't really go for the San Diego exclusives. I'm looking at the ROM toy, and I'm thinking, yeah, I didn't have the original ROM because it was stupid. This one looks fun. Well, Joe, you are running a special offer, which one of our fans has already taken advantage of.
Yes, because I have so much crap, this crap is better off in your bedroom or house or garage or whatever. Send your address to Corey at our email, which is
Corey.Strode@gmail.com.
Which is a mighty fine email, if I might say so. And I will pick something off my pile of stuff and send it to you. Could be a DVD, could be a VHS. It could be a copy of, here I got the Rocketeer, art by Neil Adams, continuity, 3D treatment by Ray Zone, 3D comic that includes the 3D glasses, and this here cassette tape, which, as I call it, my original iPod. So all you have to do is just send Corey a quick email, and I'll put something in the mail and get it off to you right away. Because I figure I ain't got time to sell all this stuff. So it's better in your pile than mine. Plus, if you ever get to the point where you do a podcast and you're giving away stuff, I will return the favor, send you my address, and you can send me something back.
Well, kids, believe it or not, you've spent an hour and a half listening to us blather on about funny books.
Yes, thank you.
And Joe's internet only took a dump once.
That's true.
So, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
I have a black belt in sarcasm, a degree in smartass, and experience in bitch. Yep, I'm a damn ninja. Somebody call my mama. Hit my music. I feel like dancing.
And because it was requested by one of the listeners, we're back to the original closing music.
Woohoo!
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo! Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky.